Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and our Corridor newsreaders Chloe Weinstein, Simone Otley, and Jaya Francis. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, and it covers some important information from the City of Kingston about the April 8th solar eclipse.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. With the total solar eclipse just 2 weeks away on April 8th, the City of Kingston is reminding residents and visitors to prepare ahead of time for a safe solarbration. Do you have your eclipse viewing glasses yet? Looking directly at an eclipse without proper protection, even briefly, can cause immediate or delayed vision loss. Only eclipse viewers that meet international standard ISO 123122 are strong enough to protect your eyes from permanent damage. Queen's University is distributing 20,000 certified glasses through the Kingston Frontenac Public Library system at no cost. Elementary and high school staff and students in Kingston will have access to Queen's Eclipse glasses through their respective school boards, including the Limestone District School Board, Algonquin and Lakeshore Catholic District School Board, and local private schools. Purchase certified glasses through Tourism Kingston's website or at the Visitor Information Center at 209 Ontario Street. Prepare ahead for stress-free eclipse enjoyment. Run errands, gas up, gather what you need before the weekend of April 6th. As Kingston is listed as a prime location for viewing the total eclipse, we plan to welcome 70,000 to 500,000 visitors. Expect heavier traffic, longer wait times for services, and the potential for cellular signal disruption due to increased demand. If you are going to one of the designated viewing locations, pack everything you need for the day, including glasses, snacks, water, sunscreen, insect repellent, and an umbrella. Most city facilities will be closed. To prioritize the safety of staff and patrons, the City of Kingston has canceled all regularly scheduled programming at the city facilities on Monday, April 8th. City administrative buildings will also be closed. Services and information will continue to be provided online at cityofkingston.ca or by phone at 613-546-0000. Keep our roads safe for all. Leave the car at home. Bike, walk, or take free Kingston Transit to your destination. If you are driving in Kingston on April 8th, be patient and aware. Traffic congestion that day is expected to be significant, so give yourself plenty of time to reach your destination and watch out for pedestrians and cyclists. If the eclipse begins while you're still in your car, please do not look directly at or take pictures while driving. Let's work together to ensure everyone arrives home safely after the eclipse.
Thank you, Chris. Over to Chloe Weinstein with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the financial uncertainty faced by a beloved local business.
Thank you, Jesse. The Grad Club has launched an emergency fundraising campaign to combat multiple factors that the board of directors say are causing unprecedented financial hardships. Like other small businesses in the country, the Grad Club is faced with the repayment of the CEBA loans that were acquired during the pandemic and also needs to address a number of infrastructure issues that have arisen in the building. This is coinciding with what the board of directors says is a 400% rent increase from the building's landlord, Queen's University. Gabriela Castillo-Raga, president of Queen Grad Club's board of directors, says that these factors compiled together have become too much for the Grad Club to continue on as normal and will need the help to survive. Castillo-Raga stated that the Grad Club is now relying on the aid from the broad community of students, faculty, staff, alumni, artists, musicians, performers, and Kingstonians who have loved and been impacted by the Grad Club over the years. The Grad Club's general manager, Virginia Clark, says that Queens has always subsidized the rent for the club, with rents remaining stable since 2013. Now, with austerity measures coming into play for the university, supporting the grad club with a continued rent freeze is one of the things that Queens is backing away from. Clark says that while it's not the sole problem, the rent increase is rather extreme and a lot to face in a short amount of time. That rent increase will phase in over 5 years, starting September 2024. In a statement, Queens says that it has always supported the grad club, but its capital investments into the building have well outpaced the amount accrued from rent. This change is meant to bring those two totals more in line. The university says it feels a 5-year span is enough time for the grad club to prepare for and adapt to the new rent. A statement released by Queens University noted that the rent for the grad club has not increased in more than a decade, and furthermore, that it is more than 4 times below typical commercial rent for similar-sized property in Kingston. The statement continued, explaining that the university provided 100% rent relief for almost 2 years during the pandemic. The statement noted that operating costs and capital investment had far exceeded the rent for several years, and that the university's goal is to reduce the gap between the rent and significant capital investments. Clark says the grad club bridges quote-unquote town and gown and is a unique part of Kingston. While it's most often frequented by Queen's students and sometimes classes, it is accessible to anyone in Kingston, and the club will hope to boost income by increasing membership of both students and non-students in the city. The grad club acts as a multi-purpose space that's rather unique to other establishments in Kingston, and it acts as a performance venue, bringing in interesting lineup of musicians on a routine basis. Despite that, Clark says the grad club can't find support from the city of Kingston's newly greenlit music strategy due to their affiliation with the Queen's University. While the changes being imposed on them from Queen's University, however, Clark says it's hard to see where that support and affiliation is actually coming from. While Clark says that's cause for frustration, she doesn't blame the university for the situation the grad club is in. But regardless of what caused it, she feels that the space is needed and that efforts need to be made to save it. The grad club is currently accepting donations and will also be announcing fundraising events in the near future. Thank you to Owen Fullerton of YGK News for that story. We now go to Dinah Jansen with a story from local journalism initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Jory Forstell, about the findings from a Just Recovery Kingston Tenant Experience Survey.
Thank you so much. A housing survey created by Just Recovery Kingston has offered interesting insights on the experiences of tenants in the city. Just Recovery Kingston is a local volunteer group formed during the COVID-19 pandemic. After hearing multiple disturbing stories about tenants' renting experiences in Kingston, Just Recovery Kingston's Affordable Housing Policy Working Group developed the Tenant Experiences Survey to understand the nature of the problems and inform tenant advocacy in Kingston. The survey ran in the summer of 2023 and received a statistically significant 462 valid responses. Saidi Jaffer, the Justice and Poverty Reduction Lead at the Providence Center for Justice, Peace, and Integrity of Creation, explained that the idea was used to gather information to highlight and address areas of concern. Jaffer noted that temporary residents like Queen's University and St. Lawrence College students were excluded from the survey as the focus was on long-term renters. Much of the report confirms that Kingston is following national and provincial rental market trends, but some of it indicates that Kingston renters face unique challenges as well. The data collected revealed that most tenants live in private market dwellings and rent equally from individual and corporate landlords. Most tenants live in 2-bedroom units and live with one other person. Most tenants are not concerned with overcrowding, with the highest concern being for households with 2 or more people in 1 to 3-bedroom units. The survey revealed high rental housing turnover rates as most tenants have moved in the past 5 years. Both Jaffer and Tara Kiner, a working group member, have theories about the rental turnover that the data seems to bear out. For one, the data captured a range of tenant experiences and struggles that often go unreported or underreported. The survey found that 26% of Kingston tenants have been evicted or threatened with eviction. This is twice the national average of 12.8%. Jaffer continued, noting that the odds of eviction or threat of eviction are 1.4 times higher if the tenants have contacted property standards or filed a landlord-tenant board application. Tenants who have faced eviction are also 1.8 times more likely to wait for more than 3 months for repairs. Kiner believes that one of the root causes of these landlord-tenant disputes is a lack of legal knowledge from the landlord about their responsibilities. Additionally, Jaffer noted that many tenants do not access the support available to them, often due to fear of consequences from their landlord or a belief that these supports will not solve their issues. Kiner explained that even if landlords are contacted to fix issues, they may simply choose not to. Unfortunately, landlords use this strategy to get people out, Kiner stated. She continued and stated that landlords want tenants to leave so they can raise rent. As Michelle Dorey-Forestell spells out, the data appears to agree. New renters pay a shocking average of 54% higher rent than established tenants in Kingston. For most tenants covered by the Residential Tenancies Act, there is a limit to how much their rent can increase each year. The Ontario government sets the guideline each year. In 2024, it is 2.5%. Jaffer noted that ultimately these issues and experiences are not unique to Kingston. Jaffer explained that the policies and practices of all levels of government are responsible for the problems with the rental system. The group intends to share their findings with local organizations involved in housing or tenant support and advocacy, as well as the government. To read the report in full, visit the Just Recovery Kingston website. Thank you to Michelle Dorey-Forestell from The Kingstonist for that story. Up next is Jesse Bell reading a story from the LJR reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blancher, about the fallout from a Transportation Safety Board report on a 2021 CN train derailment.
A long-awaited Transportation Safety Board report covering the 2021 head-on collision between two CN freight trains cited alcohol use by a rail traffic controller as the decisive factor in the accident. The union representing rail traffic controllers believes that the rail company is to blame for the incident due to a lack of proper safety features on that line. The TSB report said that the dispatcher on duty at the time of the September 2, 2021 derailment gave CN Train 532 clearance to enter the Toronto to Montreal main line from a siding, having believed that the westbound train 149 had already passed. The investigation cited a, quote, complex workload as being a determinant factor in the error made by the rail traffic controller. This error was further compounded by a failure to obtain a location report from train 149 before authorizing train 532 to access the track. The crew from 532 changed the switch to allow them to enter the main line. The crew of 149, seeing the track aligned into the siding, immediately applied emergency brakes for their train. The TSB estimated that the speed of 149 was 37 miles per hour when the two trains collided head-on. Four locomotives and 16 cars derailed. One crew member was seriously injured, two crew members suffered minor injuries, and almost 1,000 feet of track were damaged from the derailment, which closed the line to passenger and freight train services for more than 24 hours. The unnamed employee was found to have had a blood alcohol level of 0.023% when tested approximately 2 hours after the derailment occurred. It is company policy to test the BAC of employees after an incident. A third-party testing company estimated that the RTC's BAC was between 0.044 and 0.069% at the time of the collision, and between 0.064 and 0.109% at the start of his shift. The legal limit for operating a motor vehicle in Ontario is 0.08%. CN's company policy for impairment is 0.04%. The TSB report said that the Railway Safety Act does not have a time period that prohibits the use of alcohol or cannabis by railway employees before working, unlike the Canadian Aviation Regulations, which do. Christopher Minette, Director of Public Affairs for Teamsters Canada, the union which represents CN's RTC employees, said that the TSB report highlighting alcohol being a factor ignores existing safety issues. Many of the switches for industrial sidings on the CN line, known as the Kingston Subdivision, are manually operated and lack electric locks. These locks detect if a switch is aligned incorrectly. Minette believed that if the switch had been equipped with an electric lock, it could have overridden the switch order. Minette said the focus on alcohol in the report was, quote, disheartening, and noted that even if the operator was sober, the accident still would have likely occurred due to the lack of proper safety features in place. Many of the employees on the railway work on an on-call basis and do not know the start time of their shift until 2 hours before it begins. Minette said that asking employees to refrain from drinking for 12 to 24 hours before a shift when they're only being notified of the shift 2 hours in advance is not a workable solution. The Teamsters Union confirmed it is challenging the dismissal of the rail traffic controller. CN did not respond to follow-up questions about the safety equipment on the rail line at the time of the September 2021 derailment. Transport Canada officials said the federal ministry is reviewing the report, and although the TSB has no recommendations for Transport Canada in their report, the department will review the findings to determine if further action is necessary. At present, there are 12 Via Rail passenger trains and 16 to 20 CN freight trains traveling that line daily.
And thank you to Philip Blanchard from the Morrisburg Leader for that story. We now move to a story from LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, Ted Evans, about the Lennox and Addington Paramedic Services Report and what it might mean for the future of paramedic services in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Lennox and Addington County Council received a Community Paramedic Activity Report for Lennox and Addington Paramedic Services 2023. Throughout the year, they provided over 3,200 home visits and 15 clinics. The community paramedic program sees patients either in person in their homes, in clinics, or where safe to do so, online. Referrals to the program can come from allied health professionals, system partners, paramedics, or patients in the community reaching out to the program. Lennox and Addington Paramedic Services is offering information sessions to the lower-tier municipalities upon request. According to staff's report, Loyalist Township has already put in a request. A total of 267 in-home blood draws and 125 point-of-care tests took place in 2023. Superintendent for Emergency Services Paul Osborne speaks about the wellness clinic on Amherst Island.
We've started an outreach clinic on Amherst Island. And we did that with the Amherst Island Medical Group that's out there. We reached out to them to see if we could help. So we provide a monthly clinic on Amherst Island doing general medical assessments, assessing vital signs, blood draws, vaccinations, and we'll calibrate people's blood glucometers for them to make sure that they're getting accurate readings and that sort of thing. So far this year, we've reached 207 clients. That's not 200 individual people on the island, that we've had 207 people come into our clinics over the last 12 months.
Councillor Tony Fritsch notes the positive community impact.
I can tell you with certainty that I've had personal feedback from families where the community paramedics have visited and, quote, it was life-altering in a positive way. They couldn't describe, honestly, in words, how much a difference that made to them if they were the caregiver and to the person that was, quote, receiving some help.
Warden John Wise notes the growth of the program.
It's impressive how quickly this service has grown. I remember former Superintendent Churning mentioning community paramedicine. It was the first I'd ever heard about it. And we went ahead with the pilot.
Osborne talks about their future plans.
Some of our future partnerships and expansions that we're looking at currently, we're partnering, there's another OHD program we're partnering with at Kingston Health Science Center for the Cardiology and Respirology Department, and that's to handle some CHF or heart failure patients in their home and COPD patients in their home. And there was a study done through this that said that if we can intervene in at least 63 of these across KFLNA region, the savings to the healthcare system would be in the north of $3 million per year just by having them in their homes.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM Amherst Island for that story. Next, we have the CJPE Local Journalism Initiative reporter Brenda Little with a story covering the fate of the historic Wellington Town Hall.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
The Wellington Town Hall was built as a school in 1882 and is a designated heritage building, one of many throughout Prince Edward County. Up until the pandemic, it has been the hub of the Wellington community since becoming a town hall in the early 1900s. The hall is located in the middle of the village, directly across from the waterfront Wellington Park, making it a perfect venue to serve the community. For decades, the building has provided a place for Canada Day activities, pancake breakfasts, Christmas activities, community meetings, Pilates, yoga, and dance classes, to name a few. When the pandemic took place, the hall was closed to the public and used by Prince Edward County Council as offices. This continued after COVID due to renovation of Shire Hall in downtown Picton. The Wellington Community Centre, Lehigh Arena, is located north of the downtown core. However, it also had been used as offices during the Shire Hall renovation. That building opened in 2011, but has been greatly underused due to the high cost of renting spaces within the building. This has left the community with few options for activities. The town hall itself has a crumbling foundation, condemned second floor, no wheelchair accessibility, and the kitchen needs a complete renovation. There has been no maintenance of the building since amalgamation in the late 1990s. County is quickly realizing that many of their aging buildings are in the same state of disrepair, and the estimated cost by the assessment is $5 million, money the county does not have. During the council meeting, Councillor Maynard requested an amendment to pause the expression of interest process and asked that there be a conversation with the public, adding that the residents deserve to have their questions and concerns heard regarding the town hall, the quote, People's Hall. She asked that council take the time to consider what innovative and creative solutions may result from a public conversation. There were numerous questions for Lisa Lindsay as well, a Director of Recreation and Community Facilities. Councillor Nyman asked about the cost of repair of the town hall and how a delay of a year or more would affect the building. Lisa Lindsay responded.
We're embarking on an asset management plan for our buildings. So it's been maybe a blessing in disguise that we haven't really known the state of our buildings thus far. But once we're starting to receive this staggering information, we certainly have to take action, whether we need to take action right away within the year. But we are aware that we have foundations that need to have engineered reports. We are aware that we have significant masonry work. I don't think that waiting a lengthy period of time is going to be great for that building. Not caring for the building over a period of time is going to be the tragedy.
Council voted on Councillor Maynard's amendment, but with a 6-4 result, it failed. The Expression of Interest Working Group will be formed to include two members of the public instead of one. Following the council meeting, I spoke with Lisa Lindsay regarding the use of the Wellington Community Centre, Lehigh Arena, and her response was good news for the community.
Given that the Wellington Town Hall is closed to the public, is there any consideration to make the Lehigh Arena a little bit more accessible to the public?
Well, the new fees and charges bylaw, the 2024 fees and charges bylaw, the in-kind schedule, makes rentals of all spaces in the municipality at no cost to participate free to use. And our increase of rentals has been quite drastic since the passing of the new budget. So we certainly are seeing an uptick in rent.
What if somebody wanted to do a dance class in there?
Perfect question. If someone was wanting to do a dance class and it was open to the public, advertised for anyone to participate, there is no cost for someone to participate, it is completely barrier free and no one is generating revenue, you use the space at no cost. That's all municipal spaces. That is not just a town hall, that is not just a community center, it is all our municipal spaces.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to the team at County FM for that story. We now move over to Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. We begin by looking at the weather for Thursday, March 28th. We saw a mix of sun and cloud, a daytime high of 6 degrees with an overnight low of minus 5. Moving into the Easter weekend, starting with Friday, March 29th, another beautiful day in the city of Kingston, daytime high of 7 degrees, and it will be sunny with an overnight low of minus 4. Saturday, March 30th, the warmest day of the Easter weekend with a daytime high of 8 degrees and an overnight low of minus 6. Sunday, March 31st, Easter Sunday, daytime high of 6 degrees. It will be sunny and drop down to an overnight low of minus 4. Easter Monday, we're looking at a cloudier day, so some of that brilliant sunshine is gone, but temperatures will remain consistent in that 6 degree range. Moving into the following Tuesday, we do have a 50% risk of precipitation on Tuesday, April 2nd, but it's going to be fairly warm with a daytime high of 7 degrees and an overnight low of minus 1. This concludes your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to CFRC's Danielle Draper for the Community Concert and Events Calendar.
Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. On March 28th, head to Amaranth Stoneware to create garden gnomes from 6 to 8 p.m. This event is a fun introduction to clay with lots of opportunity to get creative and learn how to create pottery at home. This class includes clay, tools, glaze, firing, and inspiration. Reserve your spot for $12 at amaranthstoneware.ca. Also on March 28th, head over to Daft Brewing from 7:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. for Rowena Way's Signature Bingo. This event is free and there's no need to register. On March 29th, Fresh Food Market Pop-Up, an initiative of Kingston Community Health Centers, will appear at the YMCA from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Fresh Food Market Pop-Up brings affordable produce and chef-created gourmet healthy options to Kingston and surrounding areas every week. Visit freshfoodmkt.ca for more. On March 30th, Hockey Canada's national women's team will play a pre-tournament game against Finland at 3 p.m. at Slush Puppy Place. Don't miss the return of best-on-best hockey in Kingston. Secure your tickets now at ticketmaster.ca. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and to meet other students and wider trans community members? Head over to the Athletic and Recreation Center on March 31st at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. Swimmers will meet at the ARC Earl Street entrance at 2:20 p.m. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, visit gogalesgo.com. Moving into our concerts for the week, on the 28th, Cassie Noble will be performing at the RCHA Club from 7 to 9 p.m. for free. On the 29th, The Change will be performing at the RCHA Club from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Cover is $10. On March 30th, there will be a free karaoke night at the Royal Tavern from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Also on the 30th, Scott Rulau and friends will be performing at Spearhead Brewery from 7 to 10 p.m. This event is free and open to all ages. And lastly, on the 31st, Craig Jones will be performing at Spearhead Brewery from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for free. This event is all ages. This has been Danielle with your weekly event and concerts calendar for March 25th to 31st. Wishing you all a great week.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news right here on The Corridor. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
You're true. True friend loves you just as you are.